Hello then everyone, and welcome to this webinar today. I'm Francis Seely from GlobalNet 21 and a local group called Empil Voices. And this is one of the many webinars we do that cover global, national and local issues. And today we're going to look at an interesting issue, and that's how do we involve citizens and communities in the decisions that affect them, particularly planning, but not just planning, other decisions as well. And to help us, we've got two people, one who you'll see in a minute, Jane Maggs, who actually developed a participatory project in North London, for which the Planner magazine gave her the title of Woman of Influence, which is quite an accolade. And she'll tell us about that. And in doing it, she worked with Civic Voice, and we've got Ian Harvey from Civic Voice here as well. So let's get right into it and talk about the issue that was involved. So Jane, can we start with you? And do you think you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, my background really was as a scientist. So I did a science degree and then went to work for, worked in the pharmaceutical industry and was mostly involved with production of publications and computer databases. But really, as far as this is concerned, really, I got involved with Bathgate District Civic Voice some many years ago, and then joined their committee, joined the planning group, then joined the committee, and eventually took over as secretary, and have now handed that over to someone else at last. So I was then became much more actively involved in what we were doing locally, and then what Civic Voice were doing, and got more involved with Civic Voice, thanks to Ian, and joined their regional forum some years ago, and have just become one of their new trustees on their board.
Okay, so let's go to Ian then, and if you could tell us about what Civic Voice is and what your role is there.
We're still a relatively young organisation. We set up just over 10 years ago, and I set it up with a fellow AFL colleague. And I'm now the current executive director, and we are the national body for the civic society movement. So we work with organisations such as the Southgate District Civic Voice, such as the Enfield Society, and another 250 plus groups across England who are working to give an independent local voice to the local community that is non-party political, it's non-religious, it's people coming together in their spare time to sort of champion a better built environment and to make their part of the world just a little bit better. And we give all those groups support in a number of different ways. And we identify their issues and of concern, and we take them nationally to Parliament and try to campaign to make a one or two changes happen. So yes, I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Okay, so, I mean, Civic Voice then helps to facilitate discussions between residents and organisations that make decisions that affect people's lives. Now, 2 years ago, that happened in Southgate, didn't it, Jane, and the development that happened there. I mean, can you tell us about that?
Well, it started because the developer had presented their plans a number of times to what was then the conservation advisory group, and been told they weren't really appropriate, but they kind of carried on, and they had what they considered to be a consultation, which was basically an exhibition of what they were planning to do. And not that many local people actually knew about this. So a few days later after that, there was a meeting in the street where there were people who were living around where the development was going to be. And they were very confused. They didn't know what was happening. They didn't know what they needed to do. They were very angry that this was happening without any input from them. And the whole thing then, it became clear that something needed to be done, that we needed to channel this negative energy and anger and try and do something positive with it. And having been to quite a few different meetings, being to Civic Voice meetings where people have talked about community involvement, community workshops and so on, we're then at Southgate District Civic Voice that we should do something to channel this energy. And that's kind of where it started from.
So did people, first of all, when they started talking about the development, which was a high-rise development, I gather, did they have a sense of impotence, not knowing what they could do?
Yeah, that's what came out of that particular meeting, was that people didn't know what to do. They didn't understand how the planning system worked, and they didn't really understand how, or many of them didn't understand how they could get involved and express their views. And so that sort of feeling of impotence was what was what we needed to channel to actually produce something a bit more positive and useful to the community.
So what you did, I think, is that you sort of organised a community planning weekend in the local church to involve the wider community in what was happening. So how did you go about doing that?
Well, we start. The first thing that happened was that there was a ward forum with our local councillors, and floated the idea there, because obviously people, this was only a few weeks later and people were still not knowing what to do and still quite cross. So there was a lot of shouting and anger. So we floated the idea and people said, yes, this was what they wanted to do. So they, and they signed up to be involved. And then I came out of that meeting thinking, oh, what have I done? Never done anything like this before. Nobody in our organisation had any experience of this. So we turned to a man who did. So as it happened, a few days later, there was a meeting with Civic Voice. So I spoke to Ian and Sarah James at Civic Voice and asked for their advice and guidance, and was very pleased that they actually offered to get involved and come out and have a look at Southgate. And the plan went from there, really.
Okay, so you knew a man who can, and that man was Ian. So Ian, tell us what happened when Jane contacted you. What help were you able to offer?
So whenever a group such as Jane's asked that question, immediately we're thinking, here we go again, another community group from across the country looking to want to maybe object to a development, because that is usually when groups get in touch with Civic Voice, they're saying, we want to object to X, Y, or Z. So we always go through, internally, we always go through a bit of an exercise to sort of look at what the group have come forward with, because we, as an organisation, we believe in better development and better outcomes if you engage the community. So it's not about sort of objecting to development. It's very much about saying, if we engage people from an early process and we explain to them and inform them about what is happening in their local area, 9 times out of 10, people just want a voice. So we can have a mechanism in place that actually can help communities get that voice. But the first thing we always do is to check that it's not just a campaign to stop something, because that's not what we are about. So when we realise it's not a campaign to stop something, one of my colleagues, and in this case it was Sarah James, she went down to Southgate. I think she spent a day or so with you, Jane, yeah, looking at the application, looking at sort of the proposals, speaking to local people. Sarah came back and said, there is room for Civic Voice to get engaged on a local level, and there is room for a community planning event of some sort to be developed. So we then looked at the calendar and we responded to Jane and said, looking at the calendar and looking at where we are today, we could possibly do something in 6 weeks because there's a spare weekend, or 6 months. And Jane then thought, well, I have to look at the time frame they were working on. So we opted for 6 weeks. Is that right, Jane?
It was. Yeah, that was, it was very tight. But
yeah, it was very tight to put it together.
But what you did, Ian, I think, is you sort of developed what you call a community panel, which was based, was it, around a series of workshops that enabled people to get a better understanding of the issues. I mean, tell us how that worked.
Yeah, very much so. What you sort of see within the planning system is that there's a lack of trust. And there was research a couple of years ago undertaken by Grosvenor PLC that said just 7% of sort of the public sort of trust local planning authorities when it comes to making the right decisions for their local area. And just 2% of people trust developers when it comes to making the right decisions for their local area. What we do is we come into it as an independent sort of tool to say that we're here and we will undertake a process, we will support your community group, but it's about sort of giving people the opportunity to feel as though it's been done meaningfully, it's been done in an independent manner, and that you can trust us to do an honest and sort of process, and the results will be genuine out at the end. It won't be a perceived, we're trying to sell you a development or we're trying to object to a development. So once we'd agreed with Jane, yes, let's go for the 6 weeks, we then put in place the process of setting up the community planning weekend. But ahead of that, we issued a survey, an anonymous survey that we asked Jane and her colleagues to distribute across social media and to distribute locally. And we asked them to put together a leaflet, which we asked them to sort of basically go out there and make sure that the people that were in the session on the day, on the workshops on a particular Saturday, were not just a closed group of people, but that anyone who was aware of it had the chance to walk in and sort of participate and learn more about the development. So the first few weeks, it was very much about a survey and sort of gathering online views, because not everyone can engage, come into a room. So it's important they still have a voice, but then sort of raising awareness that the event was taking place.
Okay, so you had the workshop, you got people involved, it was open access. Jane, what happened in terms of outcomes? What sort of decisions were made and what action was sort of recommended?
Well, out of that workshop, it became very clear that people didn't object to the development going ahead. That wasn't what it was about. They just objected to some of the ideas of the development, particularly obviously the tall towers and the lack of parking, which is I'm sure everyone knows parking is a big issue in around Southgate in any case, but it was actually how the development was going to look that was the big concern, and people were asked how high they would like it to go. And actually I was very surprised. People were happy to go up to 8-10 stories, whereas most of Southgate is only about 4 stories. So it wasn't that people didn't want high rise developments or even intense developments. There were aspects of this design that they didn't particularly like. So that all became clear. And actually I have to say one thing about the whole day was actually it was very good humoured, and people who didn't really know each other were talking, and people who hadn't particularly wanted to talk to other people were actually all busily engaged and doing stuff. And as far as the outcomes then were concerned, Ian then took away all the results and produced a report which we then fed back a few days later to the community.
Ian, when you do these type of things and various people come in, some people would say, okay, you've got local people, but development of sort of affects people outside that area because they need housing. And so all these charges of NIMBYism comes in. I mean, how do you react to that? I mean, you're trying to get appropriate development, aren't you? But how do you react to those charges?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we were so independent on the day. Someone actually thought we were there representing the developer when we were sort of going through the process, because we push back and we sort of challenge and we sort of have a discussion. But as part of the whole structure of the day, we spend time looking at the wider issues. So we did spend time looking at the local housing need for Enfield, and we were having a discussion to say, well, if not these towers, would it have to be green belts? Would it have to be parkland? So we were sort of getting people to sort of consider, this is not black and white. It's not as easy as maybe some people think it is. So we do like to challenge thinking, but we do make sure that people are trying to understand the issues and understand both sides of the arguments. And what was really good about the Southgate weekend is that you had people in the room who were really supportive. You had people in the room who were really against. But I would say the majority in the room were there to find out more information, to sort of want to learn more. But even the people who were totally against or totally supportive, we had them engaging in conversations, learning from each other, sort of discussing with each other. And that's what's key about everything that we do. The world is not black and white, and sometimes we try to make things more simple than actually the chaos of what we actually, how we live our lives on a day-to-day basis. So we do try to make sure that people, when they are making decisions about the height, it's about, well, if you lose 2 stories, where's that affordable housing going elsewhere? How's that going to impact other issues? So yeah, it's not just about standing there and saying, here's the developments, what do you think? It's about taking people on a journey with different people and different sort of aspects and sort of opinions, showing them the data, what the housing developer was bringing forward, but also the sort of what the local authority data was saying, so that people are trying to make decisions in a bit more of an informed manner.
So it's not just about outright opposition, it's about constructive discussion. But when you do that, Jane, you have to make links with the council because you can't make the decisions, they have to eventually. What links did you make with the council?
As far as the council, well, councillors, there were our local councillors who took a very independent view, they took a very neutral view, but actually were very helpful and provided us with information and support. And when they understood where the conversations were going and what the majority view was, they were very supportive. In terms of the actual council, the planning team, they did know what we were doing. They knew that this was happening because they were informed. In fact, they were invited to come and observe, but for their own reasons didn't come, which was probably fair enough. But they were aware. And after the weekend, Ian came back and went with some of the members of our planning group, actually went and presented the information and the outcomes to the senior members of the planning team. And at the planning panel, which happened sometime after when the planning application was kind of in full swing, we did actually at that gave feedback on what had happened at the weekend, at our community weekend, and what had happened and what the outcomes were. So they were fully aware of what was going on.
So they were aware, and I gather that overall, Jane, 451 local people objected to the scheme and 22 supported it. Now, on the planning committee, eventually they rejected the developer's plans, didn't they? I mean, do you think the panel had a significant part to play in that, or might they have rejected it anyway?
I think it was the community. I think there was a number of things. Obviously, so many objections, but I think what came out of the community workshop, they were all informed. We did let all the planning, the councillors on the planning committee know what the outcomes of the weekend were. So they were aware of the community view, and obviously some of them were at the planning panel anyway. They also did a walk around and had a look at where the site was and how it was in relation to some of the other houses. And so could see that what was being said by the community actually made sense. And it wasn't a case of people being NIMBYs. They had genuine concerns that had not been addressed by the developer.
Yeah, and I'll just go to pick up on Jane's point there about the local authority role. We ensured that the people in the room on the day understood how the local authority made the decision and the process they would follow. So that we explained to them, you can't just say you don't like it, you don't want the development. You have to sort of do it via sort of this guidance, the sort of specific terminology, something called material considerations in the planning system. So we explained to people, if you support it, these are the things you might want to say when you're supporting it. If you oppose it or you have questions about it, these are the material considerations you would sort of, so that if people were going to spend time, we wanted to make sure that it was worthwhile time. Because 450 objections just saying, I don't like it, that's no good to anyone. You need sort of real sort of responses that are pragmatic and balanced. And that's what we tried to do.
Yeah, Jane said no councillors turned up, and maybe that's not surprising. Partly, maybe that's because councillors aren't used to this sort of participatory democracy yet. They're still used to making decisions behind their closed doors. I mean, how important is it, Ian, to try and get people to understand that the use of community panels, juries, and assemblies can have a really important role to play in development?
Just to sort of, I think, Jane, there was a councillor or two that did. So he sort of popped in and popped out, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there were a number of councillors who came on the day. We also had our MP, Bambos Cheryl Ambos, and we had Joanne McCartney, who was our assembly member. She also came on the day. And then we had different councillors who turned up at the feedback session. So, no, the councillors did come. It was the planning team that didn't come. So
the officials.
But Ian, the importance of what you did, I mean, has a wider aspect than just where it happened. I mean, how important is it that people or councils get involved in this participatory process?
Absolutely. And the more forward-thinking councils realise that this is now the direction of travel, of where we are sort of going with the country. People are not prepared to sort of just sit by and allow things to happen in their local neighbourhood without knowing what is happening and without having a voice. We are seeing across the country some major issues, the housing crisis, the affordability crisis, climate change, and people want to feel as though it's happening. How can we actually sort of participate in that? And you are now seeing councils across the country, and I do say sort of very forward-looking councils, because the majority don't. The majority, as you sort of said, Francis, prefers for decisions to be and consultation to be as limited as possible, for as little people to know as possible, so that we can make a decision and move on. But what you are now seeing is that more and more councils are realising if you embed community engagement at the start of the process as early as possible, bring in as many people and sort of listen to those concerns in a genuine, meaningful way, actually you can speed up development and you can get better informed decisions. Because I look at it and I find it bizarre that we leave so many strategic important decisions to just a select few of individuals who have been voted in on cases of minor majorities of half a dozen people, and making decisions in the millions and millions of pounds for our towns and cities. And our towns and cities are full of people who run businesses, international businesses. We need to bring them into the conversation about the future of our towns and cities.
Okay. And you know, with the experience that you had in doing this, Jane, which must have been quite a cultural change for you, because, you know, it's the first time you did it. I mean, do you feel, having done it, that this could be replicated elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it every case would be different, and you would probably not handle it in the same way. And with experience, we probably would have done things differently. And you will always learn from doing these things. But I think for all particularly large developments, you need to engage. Everybody needs to be a part of that process. And I think one of the important things, it's not about us as a community saying we don't want development, because people, you have to recognise that our towns, town centres, everywhere, places change, they develop, they change. And if they don't change and they don't develop, they will die. And that, we don't want that either. But really, we want a genuine voice in the process, and to talk to developers meaningfully, because we've had conversations with developers before and they've listened to us and gone, yes, yes, we thoroughly agree. And then the planning application comes in and they've ignored everything we've said. So it has to be a meaningful discussion. And I agree with Ian, if we have those kind of discussions, and okay, so they need, it will take time and effort on the part of the community and the developer, but in the end, it would smooth through the application, and you wouldn't have to have all these people writing in, and you wouldn't have need planning panels in the way that we've had them. And you wouldn't end up with applications being rejected and going to an appeal. So I think it benefits both sides.
So Ian, if a local area wanted to follow the example of Jane and challenge a decision of some kind or the other, and wanted to set up workshops or a community panel, what help can you give them?
Yes, well, first, yeah, get in touch with Civic Voice and we can start the conversation. But it doesn't necessarily need to be about a development that you want to oppose to. It could be about coming together, looking at your local town centre, looking at your local sort of high street. It could be saying, let's get together and discuss that, bring people into a room. And Civic Voice, what we can offer is an independent facilitatory sort of role. But the way we've set this community planning weekend up, and if you look at government guidance, there's lots of different tools that you can use to sort of undertake consultation. One of my issues about that, why it keeps the power in the hand of sort of the developer and the local authority, is that usually you need to spend thousands and thousands on consultants to come in and do the consultation. What we've tried to establish with the community planning weekend is if you've got someone who can do facilitation, and in lots of communities across the country, there's people who can do facilitation, we've set it up in a way that the community can come together, can undertake their own independent consultation on a scheme, and then publish those results to generate a discussion and to generate a debate. So we can provide hands-on support. And I think the entire weekend with Jane cost, £350 us? something similar.
It was in a few hundreds. It wasn't particularly expensive.
So we can provide sort of that hands-on facilitation role, or we can give you sort of step-by-step so that you can do it locally, so that you don't need to go out to sort of employ consultants, because resources and capacity will always be an issue for sort of community groups and local who want to get involved in this sort of way. So there's lots of tools available, but we're trying to sort of demystify those tools, but do it in a way that it's simple for communities to take forward themselves.
I mean, that's really interesting, because, you know, when you set up citizens' assemblies, they tend to be exceptionally expensive. Yeah. And so people won't go down that line very often, but you've got a very cost-effective way of doing it. And I think that's important. I mean, Jane, from, you know, your experience, if someone in another area wanted to set up something, what advice would you give them about how they go about doing it?
You can't say don't do it, Jane.
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I would say go for it. I would say seize the moment and talk to Civic Voice, talk to other groups, talk to us. We are quite happy to talk to people about what we did and how we went about it. And I think the other thing is engage the community, talk to local venues. We talked to someone at the church, so they offered their space. People will help. People will get involved. And talk to members of your civic society. Join your local civic society, obviously. And actually use them. When we first did it, because we did it so fast, we didn't actually use as many volunteers as we could have done. And it was sort of a bit later in the process when we were doing other things that we actually engage people and said, can you help? And people did. People were happy to help. And that was something that we kind of missed out on, and we could have dealt with some things a bit easier if we'd actually engaged people. But there are people out there who in your organisation who can do and are willing to do and get involved.
So in some ways, it's what some people call asset-based community development. You're looking at it from the bottom up. You're looking at the strengths people have. And is that something you try to find, Ian, when you're doing a project like this?
Absolutely. The first thing I will do whenever we are asked to go into a community, because we do work for developers and we do work for local authorities and we do work for communities, so we can bring a pragmatic point of view. First thing I will do in any community is start putting together a list of Friends of Parks, residents' associations, sort of mum and baby clubs, sort of any sort of PTAs, parents, teachers, associations, because there's a whole social network, there's a whole civic network that is out there that's invisible for normal sort of community consultation. And via us, and the way we work with Southgate is we were telling Southgate to do X, Y, and Z, but we were saying, find all the residents' associations and get them to promote it. Find the sort of the Facebook groups, tell them and get them to promote the event, because people are out there, but we're not all sitting here. We're not all sitting on this webinar. People access information in different ways. So yeah, we always try to map the different sorts of networks, and then you can build from there, because every community is full of awesome expertise, but it's finding it and getting them to come forward to help. And 9 times out of 10, people do want to help.
And Jane, when all this was over, did everything dissipate, or did the people keep together in some way or the other? Are you still in contact and looking at other local issues?
No, it stayed together. I mean, some of the people who were at the events who weren't members joined, so they're obviously still engaged with what we're doing. I found it quite hard walking up the road fairly regularly, because I would meet people who'd been at the event who would stop and have a chat. And still do, and people still ask how things are going, what's happening. And as far as Southgate Office Village is concerned, it hasn't actually finished. I mean, we're 2 years on, more than 2 years on, and we're about to go into a planning inquiry because they've decided to object to the decision. So it hasn't gone away, and actually the people haven't gone away either, and people are talking and we're keeping people informed, and they're coming on to events that we're doing. So it has brought people together, and the other thing is that people who didn't know each other are now meeting in the street and having a chat, and they know who these people are. They might not know their names, but they recognise their faces, and are talking and communicating much more than I think happened before.
Which makes you much stronger for an event next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's what I think one famous writer, Ivan Lidish, called tools for conviviality, which I think are sort of really important. Well, we've sort of come to the end of the half hour part of this now, but can I ask you both, I mean, first, Jane, if anybody wanted to make contact with you and find out more about what you did, where would they go?
They can contact me through Southgate District Civic Voice. If you look at our website, there's a information on how to contact us there and how to join, or you can use the info@southgatedistrictcivicvoice.org email, and that will get to me anyway.
Okay, and Ian, if they wanted to contact you and find out more about Civic Voice, yeah. Where would they go for that?
Go to our website, civicvoice.org.uk, and you'll find us quite active on social media. So Twitter @civic_voice. And you can probably find my names from also there too.
Okay, well, thank you very much for doing that, because it's really an interesting example of how, you know, you got people together and how a local group worked with a national organisation, and how you developed a process and structure to tackle what you considered was an issue that affected a lot of people who at the start didn't know what to do. So what you did is you provided tools for empowerment, and that was really, really good and very, very important. So, you know, thank you both of you for joining us, because it's interesting. And I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in finding out more about what you do and may get in touch with you. So I hope they do. Anyhow, thank you both for joining the interview. And it's been a valuable thing to do. So thank you. And we'll end this part of the interview now.